one Chevy dealer. Another reason, Cody, is why Chevy's the buy. Chevrolet, find new roads.
RB Technologies on Route 14 East Montpelier has been creating and supporting thoughtfully designed, custom-crafted computer networks for their clients since 1997. Here's Peter Timponi from the Vermont College of Fine Arts.
Ruben and all of his crew have been working with us over the last 2.5 years. We recently had some electrical damage in the building, which took down the entire network, and they were in helping us the next day. It was a real pleasure working with them. It helped us out a ton. Here at Vermont College, we're a small operation. Our IT department, we have 2 people, so it's often hard sometimes to find the right bit of knowledge that we might need. So I have actually called Ruben before and spoke with them about, you know, things that I'm trying to do, things that I'm trying to accomplish, and they have been very helpful in guiding us along the way. Friendly, courteous, knowledgeable are the first 3 words that come to my head when I think about Ruben and everyone there, and they're a great, great crew.
RB Technologies cares about their customers. Call them at 223-4448 or online at rbtechvt.com. RB Technologies, efficiency through technology.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Connie. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. A little chilly out there this morning. Gosh, that's some big news. Newsflash. Thanks, Mark. Coming up on the program today, broadcasting live today at the State House in Montpelier, as we do on Fridays, and we have a full lineup for you. Coming up in hour number two, we will chat with Governor Shumlin, joins us coming up at 10:30 this morning. Before that, we'll check in with our White House crew. We will also talk in our second hour this morning with Representative Cynthia Browning. Later this hour, Senator Dick Mazza joins us and also Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott. We would welcome your phone calls on the program. You can reach us at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can reach us on our toll-free lines. Ken's in Daytona. Let's ring up the 800 bell. And you can do that by calling us at 877-291-8255. Coming up Monday on the program, we're going to get back into a discussion that we started, or actually I started on Thursday, a climate conference down in Randolph. One of the featured speakers down there will be joining us. I'll tell you more about that as we proceed. And again, our phone number is 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. We begin this morning. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to the Speaker of the House, Shap Smith. Mr. Speaker, thank you for joining us. How are you this morning?
I am good. I share your concerns about how cold it is. I don't mind the cold, but I'm ready for a little warmer weather.
Can we blame the legislature for this somehow?
Yes, I think we should blame the legislature. It's actually would be one of the smaller things that we would be blamed for.
Okay. Yesterday, what a day yesterday at the State House. I guess from what I'm hearing this morning, this was not a huge surprise, but the Sergeant-at-Arms, Francis Brooks, longtime lawmaker, then became the Sergeant-at-Arms, ousted, and quite definitively, 128-47, and the State House Deputy Operations Director, Janet Miller, is going to be taking over. What's the story behind the story on this, Mr. Speaker?
Well, I first of all, I want to acknowledge the amount of service that Francis has provided to the state of Vermont, not only as a legislator, as the Sergeant-at-Arms, but also as somebody who's been a community leader and a teacher for many years. And so I want to thank Francis for his service in all of those regards. I started to pick up not just last month, but over the last several months and maybe 6 months, that some people had some concerns about issues around the State House, including security concerns, safety concerns, and some other issues. Because I really don't usually get involved in a race like this, didn't really pay much attention to it, but it became clear that there was going to be somebody else in the race about a week and a half ago, and I checked in to get a sense of what was going to happen, and it became pretty clear that it was likely that Francis would not win. And so I did go and talk to him last week to tell him what I was hearing, to explain some of the concerns that I had heard, Give him sort of a sense of what I thought was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. When you say safety and security concerns, what does that mean?
Well, some people have actually talked about what happened at the inaugural address. I have sort of mixed feelings about that. You know, this is the people's house. We have to allow people to petition the house. You know, was the decorum proper? No, it was not. Did actually the people what they did probably hurt their cause? Yeah, I think they probably did. But there were definitely people who felt that that should have been better controlled and put that at the feet of the sergeant at arms. I don't know whether that's fair or not. But I think it's been a broader concern as expressed to me about some issues around the responsiveness of the office to the concerns that have been expressed, particularly by some of the chairs who deal with issues around the State House.
Okay. What would that mean? What would chairs want that the sergeant
Well, I
arms?
Think that people want, and Senator Flory talked about this yesterday on the radio, we've put in some new equipment for emergency buttons and for fire alarms. People were concerned that they didn't understand what the protocols were associated with them, how they would be used. Had reached out to the Sergeant-at-Arms office and had felt that the office had not been responsive. So, you know, like I said, this was, as Speaker of the House, I pretty much try to stay out of issues around these kinds of offices. I have a lot of other stuff that I'm trying to deal with. So this was the stuff that I picked up. I thought it was, I wanted to let Francis know before the election what I was hearing about what the lay of the land was so that he could make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that we all appreciate the service that Francis has provided, and I don't think anybody really wanted to see an election like yesterday with the results that happened.
Is there going to be more security, do you think?
You know, we did a security analysis of the building, not only the building, but the Capitol complex in general over the last several months. And I think that there were some specific issues that were raised with regard to security that we will be looking at over the coming weeks and months to assess whether we're providing the best security that we can, but also making sure that we maintain the right balance between having an open State House and making sure that the people within the State House are safe.
Do you think it's secure enough today?
You know, I don't think I'm the right person to ask. You know, I really come down on the side of open access to the State House. I feel very safe here. That's all I would say.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some money issues here. This challenge here of trying to close this budget gap seems as though it's been a real challenge, to say the least here, with not a lot of appetite for the ways that the governor has proposed raising money, in particular this payroll tax, a lot of pushback from people that would see cuts, including the State Employees Union. Where do you think things stand here on February 20th?
Well, whenever you have a difficult budget, you know that there are going to be some challenges around solving it, and that's been true for the last 6 or 7 years around the Great Recession and Tropical Storm Irene. You know, my view is that we're going to have to both raise revenue and we're going to also have to make some significant reductions. And my hope is that we can strike the right balance. I think that the governor's sort of ratio of revenue to spending cuts was probably about right in the budget that he provided. It is true that there's not widespread support for what the governor proposed on the payroll tax in particular, and that's going to leave it to the legislature to decide where we're going to raise revenue to fill that part of the budget. And my sense is that the Ways and Means Committee is going to look at things like capping deductions and proposals that have been on the table before. Let's talk a little bit about the budget reductions. You know, everybody says that they would like to see spending curtailed or almost everybody does. But then when you get into the specifics of it, obviously nobody really likes the specifics of it. I think that we're going to have to do a number of the items that the governor proposed. We are certainly going to have to address labor costs within the budget. I know that the state employees are concerned about that, and they're rightfully concerned. I mean, they work hard for Vermonters on a day-to-day basis. But in a business and at state and local levels, if you have less revenue, you have to make some adjustments in all areas where you have costs, and that includes in labor, and that's what we're going to have to do.
How do you get the employees' union, though, to discuss making reductions as opposed to doing nothing and letting the administration make deep cuts? What's the motivation? How do you get them to really talk about this?
I think it's important for the employees to decide on their own what they're going to what they would like to do. I've had some conversations with the Vermont State Employees Association. Whether we're going to be able to come to agreement with them on reductions or whether reductions are necessary, I think, is an open question. My view is that let's keep the lines of communication open. If there are ideas, we'd like to hear them. And if we can't resolve things with the State Employees Association, then likely we are going to have to give the governor authority to do what he feels he needs to do to address the personnel savings.
The Fairpoint, it looks like Fairpoint employees are going to be going back to work. What's your, I know you spoke out pretty strongly on that. What's your reaction to
I'm really glad that they were able to resolve the dispute. I know that the parties have signed an agreement, but it still needs to be ratified by the employees. And so I wouldn't put the cart before the horse. Hopefully they will ratify the agreement. We have some long-term challenges around our telecommunications infrastructure in the state of Vermont. And I think to the extent that we can put this labor issue behind us, we can look at how are we going to stabilize telephone service in the long term through if Fairpoint is the provider. And I think it's really important for us to also look at how is it that we can run broadband deeper into the state, because particularly in rural areas, that is a critical element for our economic vitality in the future.
Talking with Speaker of the House Shap Smith, a couple of weeks ago you talked about maybe doing something differently than the current healthcare exchange. Have you thought about this anymore? What are you thinking at this point on this?
Well, there are three options on the healthcare exchange, and let's back up for a second. I think that we can all agree, and I think the administration would agree, that the healthcare exchange has not worked in the way that any of us would have liked it to work. And while it's improving, I think we're not assured that it's going to improve enough over the long term. I know that we're hoping by May that many of the glitches have been worked out, but I think we need to be skeptical based on past performance. So knowing that we have some challenges around our current exchange, we need to look at what the alternatives are. One is the federal exchange. The other is a state-based exchange that works off of the federal exchange, something that Oregon's doing. Each one of those have their challenges. Federal exchange, we don't know whether subsidies are going to continue because of the Burwell case that's in the Supreme Court. We also don't know whether we could provide state subsidies. We add some additional help for insureds in the state exchange, and it's not clear whether the federal exchange would allow us to do that.
Okay. That's two.
That's two. Right. My counting early in the morning like this is not always.
Well, I'm usually
fast.
And I can miss things early in the morning, but I didn't miss that. So is there a third?
So the third thing is Oregon. So what Oregon has done is they've basically contracted with the federal government to provide an exchange, sort of the back end of the exchange, and they created sort of an access portal. That's the state's own access portal that directs you either to the exchange or to the Medicaid portion. And I spoke with the Speaker of the House out in Oregon about how that's worked. She thinks so far it's worked pretty well. They have some questions about sort of the long-term cost of the state of doing that. And before we go and change over to that, we'd want to know what the cost for us would be. And it's not assured that moving either to the federal exchange or to what Oregon has is going to save us money. But if we can save money and provide sort of the same services and our exchange is not working, then I think we ought to take a look at it.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like there's works, right? I mean,
there are warts in every single one of them. The federal exchange is not working perfectly either, but each one of the options has some challenges around it. And really what it's, from my perspective, the balance has to be, how do we provide the best product to Vermonters at the most reasonable cost? And, you know, if there are alternatives to what we've been doing, then it's our obligation, I think, as a legislature and as state government to take a look at those alternatives and see whether they work better for Vermonters.
Why not just bring back Catamount?
We have to have an exchange under the federal law. So we could bring back Catamount policies, but that doesn't divorce us from the need to having an exchange in the first place.
Last question. Where do things stand on this lake cleanup plan and raising money for it?
My understanding is that the Fish, Wildlife, and Water Resources Committee is looking to move a bill out of their committee today. There will be some variation in the funding from what the governor proposed. I don't know the exact details. I haven't spoken to David Dean this morning, who's the chair of the committee. I think you saw this week that there's a broad coalition around trying to clean up the lake. It is hugely important to our economic vitality, jobs, particularly in the tourism industry, and to the value of property along the lake, that we take care of that. Now, I know there are some people who say this is a Lake Champlain problem. You know what? This is a statewide problem. I think that Lake Champlain is just the tip of the spear. If we don't do something to clean up our waters, we will have other lakes and waters of the state of Vermont that will get to the condition that Lake Champlain is in. And we need, as a state, we have a state responsibility to take care of this.
Anything else happening today we should know about?
That seems like enough. There's a lot of stuff going on today.
Well, you're dealing with the weather a little later.
We're dealing with the weather. I'm also trying to figure out what I'm doing with my kids next week because they're on school break. And I'm not sure whether they want to spend the entire week at the State House.
55-mile-an-hour speed limit, this idea Dick Maz is talking about, we're going to ask him about coming up. Does this make any sense to you? Have a lower speed limit in the winter for the interstate?
You know, I think that my sense is you can't legislate common sense. I know this is probably something that the governor has said before.
Never heard him say that.
And even if we had a 55-mile-an-hour speed limit during the winter, my sense is that people probably would still drive faster than the conditions. And, you know, I think we have laws on the books already that allow us to ticket people who are driving too fast for the conditions. And whether we need to lower the speed limit, I'm not sure.
Okay. Maybe you can drop your kid off at WLDB. He could do like a little stint as a disc jockey or something.
If Roland will have him back, that would be great.
Have a nice weekend. Thank you very much for your time. Speaker of the House, Shap Smith. We're broadcasting live this morning at the State House in Montpelier. Coming up later this hour, we'll be joined by Senator Dick Maz coming up here shortly. Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott will join us coming up at about 9:45. Now, you can join us at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. Our toll-free number is 877-291-8255. Let me take a moment of your time to remind you about our good friends up the road at Red Hand Cafe and Bakery right off of Interstate 89, exit 9 in Middlesex. If you're looking for a great place to make your first stop in the day, they have some fabulous tasty treats. You could start the day, maybe bring a few with you into the office. You'll make a few friends with your cohorts, and you could do that starting at 7 a.m. each and every day, 8 o'clock on Sundays. And they close at 6, except for on Mondays they close at 4. You can stop there for lunch, obviously. Two great soups available each and every day, one always a vegetarian special. And you can always stop there, too, on the way home from work and pick up a couple of loaves of bread or two for your dinner meal as well. Red Hen Cafe and Bakery, all sorts of different items are available, and we would encourage you to make it all happen right off of Interstate 89, Exit 9 in Middlesex for Red Hen Cafe and Bakery. And we always appreciate when you stop in there that you say, howdy from us here at WDEV AM and FM. Our numbers on the program are 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. Toll free, you can reach us at 1-877-291-8255. We're going to check in. We were speaking with the House Speaker, Shep Smith, who is bringing us up to speed here on a couple of pieces of legislation. Mentioning one on the water quality bill here. I'm going to see if we can grab Representative David Dean here for just a moment, see if we can get a quick update here on where things stand with this bill. Mr. Chairman, good morning. Thanks for joining us. How are you? We were just talking with the House Speaker, and he said that the water quality bill you're expecting to get out of your committee today. He was correct?
Yes.
Okay. He was not entirely clear what the funding mechanisms were that were going to be included in your bill. Can you share that with us?
As of the close of business yesterday, the committee will be investigating agricultural fees and registration of products and a small increase in the fertilizer fee. The rooms and meals, and we're not quite sure at what level, because we know what we need in terms of being able to give this effort the necessary fuel, and we don't want to raise a penny more than is absolutely necessary to get this kicked off in a meaningful way. So we're not entirely sure what the rate would be on either the rooms, meals, and alcohol tax. And a penny or a two-penny increase in the gas tax is on the table. We are going to reinvestigate the increase in fees at the Department of Environmental Conservation for water quality permitting and attempt to lower those. We're going to attempt to lower all of the rates and amounts in all of those four funding sources so that we, as I said, don't raise a penny more than we need to be able to start this effort in a meaningful way to clean up the lake and the other waters of the state.
When you talked about an agricultural fee, what would that be?
Well, as of this time, we have a large farm permit, we have a medium farm permit, and we will have a small farm certification as part of the bill. And there are no fees associated with those. Those are the only permits that I am aware that state government issues without a fee. So we are looking to attach a fee to those permits to assist raising some money. And it fits under our mantra of everybody's in, so that there would be a contribution directly from the agricultural community in order to fuel water cleanup.
Can you do the, can the funding work without this rooms and meals increase, whatever that might be?
For the initial year, so that we can be on the ground July 1 of this year, the answer is no. But as part of the package, we want to look at a statewide impervious surface fee per parcel, but we don't know how much, we don't know how to do it. We've talked to state government, the entire breadth of state government. We're not entirely sure how we can do it. So we're going to ask for a study of how to implement this, bring it back, I believe, in 2 years. And at that point, all of those other increases go away because, again, under the mantra of everybody in, a per parcel fee is the fairest way to go. Statewide, everybody's in, everybody contributes to stormwater runoff, and we want that, those funds to be able to help municipalities deal with their roads and deal with their MS4 permits.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
Representative David Deans, chair of the House Fish and Wildlife and Water Resources Committee. You can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. We'll take a short break. Coming up next, we'll chat with Senator Dick Mazza. We'll be back right after this.
Looking to buy a car, motorcycle, or boat? Maybe you'd like to refinance your existing vehicle. Granite Hills Credit Union can help with a great fixed rate of 2.49% for 60 months for a new or used vehicle. We've got money to lend right now at this unbelievable low rate. Not a member of Granite Hills? Not a problem. We're open to anyone who lives or works in Washington or Orange counties. Act now before our loan special is gone. This low rate of 2.49% for a car, motorcycle, or boat won't last forever. And remember, we can help you refinance your existing vehicle too. Apply online at granitehills.org or call today to take advantage of low loan rates from Granite Hills, your hometown credit union.
At Granite Hills Credit Union, the difference is you.
Granite Hills Credit Union is an equal housing lender and is federally insured by the NCUA.
802cars.com represents the top three selling brands in Vermont, just off exit 7 of I-89. 802 Toyota sells Vermont's number one brand. Twin City Subaru sells Vermont's unofficial state car. 802 Honda sells Vermont's number three brand. This is Dave Birmingham, chief cook and dog walker. When you come to any of our dealerships, you'll be able to find the vehicle you want at the price you want. 802cars.com offers what no other dealer can. One-stop shopping for Vermont's top three brands, all just off the interstate. We'll help you find the right vehicle that fits your budget. Don't forget, we're the largest seller of certified used cars in Vermont because we all know the best new cars make the best used cars too. So click on 802cars.com for information on all our great products. Call 229-9117 and speak to one of our low-key product specialists. Drive I-89 to exit 7. We're just a minute off the interstate. 802 Toyota, Twin City Subaru, and 802 Honda. Driving to be Vermont's number one auto solution.
Hi, this is Rich Harvey from Montpelier Pharmacy and Waterbury Pharmacy. Drug abuse is a terrible problem in Vermont and the entire United States. I applaud Governor Shumlin for the stance that he is taking on this problem. Addiction ruins so many promising young lives. If you have children from middle school and up, then your children are probably being exposed to drugs. Parents, don't be naive about this serious problem. Don't be afraid to talk to them about it. The earlier that you start this conversation, the easier and more open it will become. If there are any organizations, parents' groups, or workplaces that would like one of our pharmacists to come speak about drug abuse, give us a call and we'll set up a time to meet with you to discuss this serious problem. There's no charge for it, and if we can prevent even one child from suffering through addiction, then we're all better off. Give us a call at Montpelier Pharmacy, 223-4633, or Waterbury Pharmacy, 244-7701. Locally owned and independent. Thank you.
You know that saying, new year, new you? Well, how about new year, new car from G-Stone Motors? Ride through the new year behind the wheel of a spanking new American auto. G-Stone Motors proudly welcomes three totally redesigned models to their lot. The all-new 2015 GMC Canyon redefines the small truck category with best-in-class V6 fuel economy and now able to tow 7,000 pounds. The 2015 Ford F-150, the best-selling full-size truck, has been redesigned with exciting changes from grille to gate, with extreme comfort and technology. And G-Stone Motors asks you, do you want to be part of automotive history? Come see the legendary muscle car in its 50th year, the all-new 2015 Mustang. If you're not a truck person, maybe you like the sounds of 700 horsepower in a V8 engine. Take a ride on this thrilling thoroughbred at G-Stone Motors. They have lots of pre-owned cars and trucks, and if they don't have what you're looking for, they'll find it. And the best thing is, they take anything in trade. New year, G-Stone Motors, your Ford and GMC dealer.
All right, we're back broadcasting live this morning at the State House in Montpelier. Coming up next hour, we'll chat with Representative Cynthia Browning and Governor Shumlin. Later this hour, Phil Scott, the Lieutenant Governor, joins us set the stage for the Lieutenant Governor. Is one of his friends, Senator Dick Mazza, Chairman of the Transportation Committee. Good morning. How are you?
Great morning.
Okay. Lori, we have to have you. Senator Campbell wants you to do the Red Hen ad today. I actually just did it, so you don't need to.
Great.
Let's talk a little bit about. Oh, first, before we talk about roads, yesterday the sergeant at arms ousted pretty definitively. What's your understanding of what happened here?
You know, that was come as a surprise because it wasn't really talked about. It wasn't a high subject matter around here. At the last minute, this came about, and first there was going to be three people running, and then Francis wasn't going to run, then I heard he was going to run, then at the 11th hour, others jumped in the race. But I really don't know. There's a lot of issues that, you know, people, everyone has their own opinion about this building, how it should be run, and with the visitors and the legislators here, but deep down inside, there must have been some unhappiness for people to overwhelmingly vote for a new person. So, but you know, Francis deserves a lot of credit. He did a great job over the years. It's a tough job. It's not easy. You're trying to deal with 180 lawmakers and
big egos,
and all the visitors and the lobbyists, and you're gonna along the line, you're gonna run into some enemies.
You want to see more security in this building?
I think it's time that we look at security, not just from the point of view of legislators. I think it's an issue. We have a lot of very expensive art in this building. We have a lot of visitors in this building, which is great, and no one wants to keep visitors out. There just has to be more, I think, some cameras installed. I'm not in favor of having, as you walk in the door, scanning or searching. I don't think that's... But we're going to have, over the years, a lot of different demonstrations, and we have to do it in an orderly fashion. And people have a right to demonstrate, but it also is the people's house, and we have to make sure it's safe.
Don't want any of those gubernatorial portraits getting lifted and winding up in somebody's man cave.
Well, that's true. That's true. We don't want that to happen.
Let's talk roads here. You
sure.
pretty controversial idea that you threw out. Were you just trying to start discussion here, this idea that perhaps having the speed limit go down to 55 in snowstorms?
No, I drive this road every day back and forth from Colchester here. And, here's the interesting part about this. The transportation agency, whether it's a state or towns, municipalities, we met with all the municipalities the other day throughout Vermont, and they're working 24/7 if they have to. They're not cutting back on salt. Matter of fact, salt this year, everybody stockpiled a little better. It's more expensive. We've used 100,800 tons of salt this winter, and last winter at this time it was about 92,000 tons. Our budget is $22 million versus $19 million. We have not cut back one penny on maintenance.
Because a lot of people are complaining.
Well, you hear this all. That's what's frustrating about this, because it's nothing. There's no way we're ever going to have bare roads. That's impossible. And I think we all have to share in this problem of driving to road conditions. I mean, I drove over this morning and it was pretty glazy.
Yeah, that one little section.
People were going by at 75, 80 miles an hour. And I'm saying, you can't stop. So we can't do any more than we're possibly doing now. And when I heard someone yesterday talk about the states cutting back on maintenance, that is not true. These ladies and gentlemen in our agency are working all the hours they possibly can work. And there's no cutting, not one penny of maintenance. So we've got to play a bigger role, and I say we, the public, in driving, and we've got to be more cautious, and we can't continue to pass, and the lane is all ice, because it won't thaw. The morning like this will not thaw. I don't care what you put on that road.
Right.
It's 2 degrees. Salt's not going to work. Sand blows off. So it's frustrating to hear people say, I think we all got to leave a little earlier and slow down. Now, as far as the speed limit, it was a thought that as a matter of fact, I found out now that there's a House bill out there with that very same thing to reduce the speed limit during storms only. And you'd have our signs that are up in the on the side of the road to post the speed limit of 10 miles an hour if that's possible. Maybe that'll slow some down to, instead of going 75, maybe go 65. A good example, 2 weeks ago, we had a stormy Monday. It was a very bad Monday. And the state does an analysis of speed limits on the interstate. And in one section of the interstate, the average speed that Monday was 68 miles an hour during that storm. 68 miles an hour.
Is that right?
So that showed you that some were going 75, some were going 45.
Because the people, you know, they were offsetting you and me.
That's right.
That's right. Going high 80s.
And I'm not saying I don't speed, but I'm just saying on road conditions, you have to slow down. And that's, there's nothing else we can possibly do. Nothing.
Wow. They call it Stormy Monday, but Tuesday is just as bad, isn't it?
It's just as bad.
Jeez. All right. So, but you know, the concern I heard from the speaker, the concern that actually I've raised too, is if you say it's 55, and people are going 55 and they should be going 45, they're going to turn around and say, well, you said I could go 55.
Well, I mean, the speed limit is posted right as we speak today at 65. And we continue to say drive the conditions. That's the first thing, drive the conditions of the road. But having said that, at 65, they're going to go 65 or 70. I'm just thinking maybe at 55, they'll go 55. Not that they should if the roads are icy, but it gives you a ceiling on where you should be. Sure. In some road conditions, you should be driving 35. In one area this morning, I was down to like 48. Doesn't make any difference when you try to slow down. But I don't know if it would work. I'm just trying to get the message out there that as far as the Agency of Transportation, there's nothing more we can do than we're doing now.
Why, you know, there was a state police officer today kind of escorting us in that section I think you're talking mm-hmm. about, like
yep.
around Bolton.
Yes.
Is that where you're having
yes.
that little sketchy?
Yes. Yes.
So he was going maybe 45, 50 and then turned around in one of the U-turns, but kind of slowed all of us.
Right.
All of us
and
down.
You see the blue light.
Yeah.
Makes a little difference.
And nobody was passing.
No, nobody was passing. It's always good to see someone.
But I guess why, you know, nobody's out there ticketing. I know there's sort of a safety question probably in a morning like today to not ticket people. But, you know, if you saw people pulled over, maybe you'd slow down, too.
Well, it's very difficult. As you know, they do a great job. They're out there in all kinds of weather themselves. But, you know, when there's a line of traffic this morning, I must have had 25 cars on the left lane passing this morning. Well, you know, what's an officer do? You stop them all?
Yeah.
I mean,
you
sooner or later, you know, people have said that about texting. Well, you know, you got to use common sense. But, gosh, I don't know what else we can do. I mean, you only can have so many laws and you only can have so many tickets you can write. Sooner or later, I would just hope people could say, you know, it is going to be a stormy morning. Let's leave 10 minutes earlier and slow down, but it doesn't work.
If you put these on, 244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. There's always, you know, that Islamic law where we could cut off fingers of people with texting. Do you think that might be effective, finally?
No, I think texting is working quite well.
Don't you think it's been reduced?
It's been reduced considerably. Oh, sure. No, there's no doubt about it. You're still going to have some that are, and that's the law of the land. I mean, people don't always follow all the laws, but I think it's working as well as we expected.
Let's go to Waterbury. Anita, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you? Thank you.
Good,
I have a real quick question, and I'm just wondering if we are using less or more or what the sand content on the roads is, and I'll hang up so I can listen. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, sand has always been a very controversial issue, and that's one of the items that, you know, people have said, number one, it blows off very easily, and number two, there's been a concern about the environment of it blows off in the ditches and the culverts. But, no, I think this winter we've used it when possible, but the first choice is either brine or salt. That certainly is the first choice.
You pro-brine, anti-brine?
You know, I haven't seen any statistics yet to say brine is bad. We're not using quite as much this year because we're not putting it down, I guess, as early. We're waiting more for the storm to have it work. But it is a faster working substance, and I think it's something that we certainly will continue to use.
Is it cheaper than salt?
No, basically it's just water and salt mixed together, and we have to buy the equipment for it, so... I think it works in some areas. In other areas, it doesn't work as well, but it does thaw faster.
So go up to South Burlington. Julie, good morning.
Good morning. Senator Camazza, I wonder if there is a law already in place, or would there be a possibility of some legislation with the tractor trailers and limiting their ability to use our interstate with certain weather conditions?
Well, it's pretty difficult to do that. The interstate was built with federal funds many years ago, and they have a perfect right to use it. They pay their fees, they pay their registration. And the other thing would be
If you restrict them on the interstate, they take secondary roads. It's very dangerous going through communities. You talk about a 53-foot trailer, overall length over 75 feet. And so there, the towns and villages would be very upset if you're trying to push that traffic through their villages and towns.
Let's go to Waterbury. Chris, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Mark. Good morning, Dick. Driving back from Montpelier there, I heard you come on with Dick, so figured I'd call in. Dick, I was a gentleman sat in front of you there two springs ago and suggested perhaps you lower the speed limit to 55, but my suggestion was from December 1st to March 31st, because I think personally that trying to do it during snowstorms, nobody's going to pay attention to it. And I also suggested that you up the fines for driving too fast for the conditions to $1,000. You're right. The state's done all they can this year to try to keep the roads clear, and with the cold temperatures being what they are, the stuff that you're using isn't perhaps being as reactive as you'd like it to be. But if you were to implement a much stricter fine for even just driving too fast, let's say the speed limit's posted at 55 and there was a $1,000 fine associated with driving faster than that during those conditions, I guess my question to you is, what reason would you have not to lower the speed limit and not to implement significant enough fines to catch people's attention?
All right. Thank you for your call.
I don't think I agree with you about lowering the speed limit from December through, I think you said March or April, but I think if the roads are bare and they're clear, people have a certain right to go at 65 miles an hour. What you'd have to do is have your signage boards lower it during storms. I think people would accept that a lot better. But you'd also have to warn them every few miles, because certainly you forget pretty easily when you see one board, flash board out there that says 55. But as far as fines, that's an item that would create a lot of controversy, but it's something we could certainly discuss.
Last question. I was just talking with Representative David Dean, chair of the House Fish and Wildlife and Water Resources. They're going to come out with this lake bill today, and included in the potential funding is a increase in the gas tax. Any interest in that?
Not at this time. I think there's we had some discussion the other day from the leagues of cities and towns that wanted to talk about a gas tax. It is too early. We don't know where gas is going to settle in price. As far as earmarking is specifically for water quality, I think the transportation has a fund, that's where the gas tax belongs.
Thank you for your time.
Appreciate it.
Senator Richard Mazza, Democrat from Colchester, chair of the Senate Transportation Committee. We'll take a short break. Coming up next, we'll talk with Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott. Back in a moment.
It's no secret Mejuron Supermarket is a great place to shop. I'm Tom Mejuron. For over seven decades, Mejuron's has been catering to the needs of the Mad River Valley and beyond. We have custom-cut meats, fresh produce and seafood, regular and organic grocery, locally produced foods galore, topped off by an extraordinary wine and beer department and a state liquor agency. Shop Mejuron Supermarket, Village Square Shopping Center, Waitsfield.
Hi, everybody. It's Alan Buzzbusby coming at you from Poulin Auto Sales and Service. You've probably been told at some point in your life that if you really want something bad enough, you're going to have to go just a little bit further out of your comfort zone to get it. Well, when you're buying your next previously owned vehicle, you're going to have to go just a little out of your comfort zone to land that perfectly awesome vehicle. Don't worry, we won't ask you to juggle or breathe fire. We're just going to ask you to drive a little bit further down Shelburne Road so that Poulin Auto can help you get into that vehicle you really want. With our 0% financing on previously owned vehicles, 3 years, 100,000-mile warranty, it's no wonder we're Vermont's largest previously owned dealer. Come visit me and my team on Shelburne Road, just a stoplight further than the other guys, or visit us at our Barry location on East Barry Road. We're always open at PoulinAutoSales.com. Poulin Auto Sales and Service, changing the way you feel about buying a car.
Do you have super sensory skills? Are you a flavor enthusiast? If so, the Keurig Green Mountain Sensory Test Center wants to hear from you. We are looking for consumer panelists to test a variety of food and beverage products from Green Mountain Coffee and other brands. This would be a periodic and ongoing opportunity at our test facility in Waterbury Center. No experience necessary. Plus, for every 30-minute session you attend, we'll give you an Amazon gift card just for giving us your opinions. How sweet is that? Want to learn more? Give us a shout at 802-882-2703.
Chase away the winter blues as a new gardening season approaches by walking through the grand landscape garden display filled with the sights and smells of spring at the 2015 Vermont Flower Show. Join Greenworks, the Vermont Nursery and Landscape Association, at the Champlain Valley Exposition the weekend of February 27th through March 1st. Visit over 90 vendors and experts offering gardening advice, services, and products, and attend your choice of over 40 free seminars, workshops, and cooking demonstrations. Fun for the whole family with hands-on activities and entertainment. There's something for everyone at the Vermont Flower Show, so join them and get inspired. Buy tickets in advance at greenworksvermont.org, at all Price Chopper stores, gardener supply stores, or at the door. To learn more about the Vermont Flower Show, visit www.greenworksvermont.org. Again, join them the weekend of February 27th at the Champlain Valley Exposition and chase those winter blues away.
Back at the State House in Montpelier, let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to the Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott. Senator Mazza ready to declare you as a candidate for governor for 2016. You prepared to do that?
Not today. No, okay. Thank you.
You have been out on the road, though. You've been seeking some input from Vermonters out there on economic development issues. So, I mean, isn't this kind of the warm-up here to something?
You know, I've been talking about this for 3 or 4 years. Ever since I was elected as lieutenant governor, I thought that the economy was something that we should pay more attention to. And, you know, I did that Vermont Everyday Jaws Tour, and I still do that. But it kept me in contact, I think, with the people of Vermont, employers, employees, and I sense this crisis of affordability that we're facing. It's been happening for a long time. You know, they've been screaming for property tax relief, been screaming for many, many things. And it's about economic opportunity and prosperity. And we're losing the battle just a bit. And our demographics are shifting. I've talked about that before. Aging population. We have 625,000 people in the state. And that category from 25 to 45, we're losing 30,000 people out of that category alone, which is about 30%. And those are the folks that, you know, they pay the bills, they pay taxes, that's our workforce. They have families, they buy homes, they put kids in school, and they're not doing it because we're losing that.
What's the best idea you've heard out on the road so far?
There's been a number of them. You know, some of them are consistent. They aren't all big, grandiose ideas. You know, one that I heard the other day that I somewhat forgot about, this was down in Rutland, because we had this debate a while ago, but it was about tax credits for film industry. And we have the film commission, which has been transformed into some other department now. But I remember we decided not to give tax credits anymore. And I would have to say, unless somebody can prove me wrong, we're probably receiving 100% of the benefit of the taxes at this point of all the films being done in Vermont, which is none.
Mm-hmm. Well, 100% of zero is, zero.
Yeah, right, exactly. So we didn't win that battle, is what I'm saying. And if we had allowed for tax credits, and we can still institute that, the ripple effect is great. I mean, you think about the rooms and meals, you think about the labor, and think about bringing people in to see our state and to market Vermont as well. I mean, when you have a film in Vermont and they see it on the big screen, it means something. And so I think that's one idea that I forgot about, and it was brought up by Bruce at the Paramount Theater in Rutland when I was there. And I thought that was a pretty good idea. Little one, but a good idea.
Let's go to Plainfield. Bob, good morning.
Hey, good morning. The other day on Bill Sayre's program, he had a gentleman from Barrie who is the CEO of a company that has a number of factories throughout the United States, including one in Vermont. He was claiming that it costs something in the vicinity of 64% more to do business in Vermont than it does in, for example, a similar factory that they have out in Idaho, and he was suggesting that if they do any sort of expansion at all, it will not be in Vermont. So I'd like you to comment on that.
Well, you know, yesterday, I think there's more fact than fiction there. We had the announcement about Plessant in Bennington, and they had last year had eliminated one division. There was 150 jobs that we lost around last year, and they announced yesterday they were shutting down the other section of Plessant in Bennington. And you know, I said in my press release something to the effect that we have to look in the mirror. You know, we can't keep blaming this on the national downsizing and whatever, which is true in this case, in a lot of cases. But they have to make choices about where they go, and whether it's Plessant in Bennington, or whether it's Kennametal that was that left us in Lindenville, and I think there was about 60, 70, 80 jobs in Lindenville. And that one in particular, there was two divisions, one in, I believe, Virginia, one in Lindenville. They did about the same thing. The company was looking to downsize. They're looking to merge and close one division down. And they did the same exact thing. Well, they went through and they looked at you know, the bottom line. What was the cost of doing business in Vermont versus what was the cost of doing business in Virginia? And they figured that it was less in Virginia, and they closed the one in Vermont down. So, you know, we have some realities here that are very tough to get through. Our climate is conducive to being expensive. It's tough to maintain the roads. It's expensive to maintain our infrastructure because of the frost thaw situation. So it exasperates the cost of our infrastructure. So we have a lot of challenges, but at the same time, we need to understand and know that we have to compete on a global basis now. It's not the same as it used to be, both regionally and globally. So we have to reflect on that and figure out ways that we can highlight what we do best, but also maybe make up some of the shortcomings where we're expensive.
Let's talk about this budget deficit. There seems to be some negative reaction to these cuts. The State Employees Union, for example, some resistance to the ideas that the governor has to raise money. Where do you see this settling out, Lieutenant Governor?
Well, I think that we have to look at making some changes. You know, in terms of asking the BSEA to open up the contract. I don't know as I'm in favor of that myself. I think a deal is a deal. I think it's tough to go back and either renege or ask them to do something different. Whether it's a handshake or a contract, it doesn't really matter to me. But at the same time, I think it's more fair. I think it creates a lot of animosity as well if you have to ask somebody to reduce their wages, because we've done that a couple of times. I think the reality is we're going to have to cut the workforce, though. I think there's going to be a reduction, and that's going to be tough. And I've been in business now for 30 years, and when we have a shortfall in revenue, we have to look at our operating costs. We have to look at ways we can reduce our costs, and labor is a big part of that. And sometimes in the short run, that's what you have to do to survive. Then to try and make changes so you become more efficient so that you can do things differently and better in the future. And I think that that's what we're going to have to face. We've raised the budget hundreds of millions of dollars over the last decade. So there are ways we can reduce and cut. And again, it's about this mistrust we have with everything. When you think about health care, you think about this budgetary issue, all kinds of things. I'm not sure that Vermonters trust our government. They don't trust the insurance companies. They don't trust the government. We don't even trust each other sometimes. And that's what happens when we have these tight budget situations. And I was talking with a group the other day, and I thought to myself, if there was more trust, and I think things like the healthcare exchange, the fiasco, the complete failure of that has added to that mistrust in government. They've seen, they've witnessed, they've felt it and said, we can't handle that. How are we going to handle this? And they're not telling us the truth about whatever. We've talked about having a budget that was bare bones in the past, and then all of a sudden the fiscal year starts and there's a shortfall of revenue and we cut it $31 million, they say, well, then there's fluff. You know, they don't trust that
right.
We keep saying. So we have to reinstill that trust in government so that they, when we have a shortfall, when we're bare bones, there's no place else to go, no fat, that they will say, and we say to them, you know, we're going to have to raise taxes just a little bit to get through the next year, and then we'll sunset. Then they would trust us that they know that we're there and that we will sunset it as well. But there's no trust there for that at this point. So we're going to have to cut. We're going to have to make some changes, and it's going to be painful.
Let's go to Corinth. Forbes, good morning.
Morning. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Good morning, Forbes.
There's a disconnect between, or a partnership disconnect between government and business and industry and entrepreneurs. What can we do to get that back? Because there's a lot of great minds out there, and they're not just in an elected position, but we have an adversary position that I can see now between government and business and industry. Have to change that around somehow, but how would you do it?
Okay. All right. Good question.
You know, it starts with just each and every one of us. I think I've started this this economy pitch session where we did it on the very first day. We asked 15 entities to come in, and I described it as a combination cross between speed dating and Shark Tank, and so that we gave them 5 minutes to tell us what we could do to help them, help businesses, entities, and organizations. What can we do as a state government to make life better in terms of more prosperity and actually doing something to make your business flourish? And we've heard, you know, the first day was great. We had some good ideas out of there, and they're not huge ideas, but some good conceptual ideas. Then I went to Rutland and did the same thing, came up with some other ideas there, went to Franklin County and St. Albans this past week, some more great ideas there. I'm going to Windham County next in March 9th. And Addison County after that. So I guess what I'm saying is we need to listen. You know, we need, and then after we listen, we can't just stop there. We have to turn what we hear into legislation, little things, bits and pieces.
This year or next year?
Right now, yeah. I mean, there's been four or five bills that have been introduced as a result of the first session that we had. And
tell me one or two. What, like what?
Sales tax holiday came up. There was 9L was discussed. The cloud tax that was on the software revert back to not taxing the cloud.
Okay.
That came up. That's in there. I mentioned the sales tax holiday, I believe. There was a marketing approach about innovation by nature. That's been introduced as well. There's some more that are coming. The first time home buyer tax credit.
What does innovation by nature mean?
There was I hear this a lot on this pitching tour, and I keep wanting to make sure that people understand. I'm saying pitching with a P, not a B, because it can get that way, and that's what I don't want to hear. I mean we have to hear because it's realistic, but. But at the same time, I want to hear about things we can do to make it better. I don't want to hear about all the things we're doing wrong. I want to hear about what we can do right.
Okay.
So, but this is about a marketing approach for the state of Vermont, and it was brought up by somebody from the Chamber of Commerce, and it's been, again, marketing has come up a lot during these sessions about how we can market Vermont better, that we don't do enough to highlight all the innovation that has come out of Vermont, whether it's John Deere that was an innovator and inventor in Vermont. We have a number of stories that should be told that we should be getting out there to bring people in.
So the head of the head of the Department of Tourism here in Vermont, Megan Smith, is in Australia right now trying to market Vermont as part of and she's at a New England booth. Is that a good use of state resources, time and money?
Well, I think anything we can do is good. But
Australia?
the conference in Australia?
Ken might say that that's a great place to go. But
if you had in-laws there, like he does, maybe, yeah.
I would contend that maybe we should be looking into Canada a little bit more. We've had a great relationship with Canada. Maybe regionalize a little bit better. Compete with some of our neighbors as well. Learn from them. I mean, we don't have to look too far to look at competition, that being New York. And they've had a great marketing approach that they're using that I think is fairly successful. But we can do that as well. We can compete. We're all competitive in some ways, and we just have to find the ways, our attributes that we can highlight.
Let me take a call from Worcester. Michael, good morning.
No, from Waitsfield.
Waitsfield, good morning.
Yeah. Talking about marketing, this week we have the best ski conditions in the United States today. And this week we have so many tourists from all over the country with their young families here. I do a lot of skiing. I'm in the ski areas all the time. I never once see the Department of Marketing, Phil Scott, or Governor Shumlin, or anybody walking around the lodges thanking people for coming and to remind them how good a vacation they could have if they come in the summer. It costs nothing. You don't have to go to Australia. You just have to go to Stoke, Gillington, Mount Snow, and Sugarbush, and just shake hands with the people and say thank you. I don't understand. Yeah. It's not being done. It's easy, and it's simple, and people like that direct contact.
Yeah, I'll defend myself, and I'll defend Governor Shumlin at the same time. We get out quite a bit, and we do go to different places. I go to ski areas all the time, or ski villages for different events all the time. And I know the governor does as well. And we're trying to do whatever we can to promote Vermont. And I think we're very much in agreement on that. But it's tough, when we're trying to pay attention to Vermonters and their struggles and what they're facing, and trying to help them and doing our jobs to go and take an afternoon to go skiing as well. So I get your point, and I think that I'm very, very thankful that our tourism and our skiing industry in particular, but all other facets as well. We have some great opportunities here, and when we think about the bike trails and so forth that we're doing, and what Wasson brought to us with IBM, with the ski areas. I mean, that was the connection there. You know, the next Wasson could be on one of our bike trails up in the Northeast Kingdom, and bring with them that innovation that we need here in Vermont. We need new industry.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott, this is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugarbush, and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier. We head down to Washington, D.C. Joining us live on the line this morning from Talk Radio News Service, here's Victoria Jones. Good morning.
Here at top of Sugarbush.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
When are you going to come up skiing, spend some of your money up here?
I would love to. I mean, that would be just the best.
Okay.
But I bet it's warmer up there than it is here, too.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but, you know.
It has not been as cold this morning at this date. 1896.
Wow. All right. That's quite a while ago, huh?
Yes. We don't know what to do with ourselves.
Yeah, apparently. All right. Let's talk some news here. What's going on we should be worrying about or not worrying about?
Well, one thing we should be thinking about is Congress, of course, is on recess because it's President's week for them. They come back next week. They will have 4 days, because they usually only work a four-day week, to solve the issue of the Department of Homeland Security funding, which they probably won't do. They may be able to pass a continuing resolution. That would be short-term funding. The issue with that is a couple of fold. One is that would not involve any new funding. It would just keep things as they are. So it would mean that nothing that really needs to get done gets done. So, for example, they need to train Secret Service agents to guard the potential 2016 presidential candidates. They're not going to get trained. Things like
that. Oh, all right.
Yeah. I mean, significant things are not going to get done. Also, you get a continuing resolution, short-term funding. Well, it means that that has to be revisited short-term. So they've just kicked the can down the road. So it's not a solution to the problem at all. So that's one issue that's going on. The other issue that's going on is looking back over the last 3 days of the White House summit on violent extremism and a little bit of head-scratching over the New York Times story this morning that the FBI director, James Comey, was not invited to the event, even though his counterpart at the FSB, which is the successor to the KGB, was there.
All right. That doesn't make a lot of sense, does it?
Well, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. The administration is saying that he wasn't invited because they didn't want the emphasis to be on the law enforcement aspect of this. But it turns out that yesterday, at the where there were 65 countries or so represented, there were law enforcement representatives from many of those countries. So there's more head-scratching going on. So I expect that Josh Earnest, the White House spokesman, will face a lot of questions about this at the briefing today.
Okay, all right. Anything you want to mention coming up next week?
Well, the big thing, of course, next week is Homeland Security funding. That's the main thing we're keeping our eyes on for next week. That's like the biggie for all of us next week.
Okay, all right. Have a great weekend. Thank you very much.
You too. Enjoy where you are.
A moment of your time for our friends at Jet Service Envelope. If you're looking for a great local printer, make it our friends at the Jet. How easy is it for you to reach them? So easy. 229-9335. They also, you'll find them on the web at jetservice-envelope.com. They're located in Southbury, but you don't really need to worry about that. You can just send your items over to them electronically. They'll do all the printing that you need to have happen, whether it's trifold brochures, your memoirs, any other thing that needs ink on paper, they can make it happen. And they even deliver for you, too. So check them out on the web at jetservice-envelope.com or at 229-9335. And that web address, again, jetservice-envelope.com. Speaking of health care, coming up on next Wednesday, Al Gobay, the chair of the Greenmount Care Board, joins us. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back after this.
We are high performance, low pressure. You've all been waiting for the President's Day event at Walker Volkswagen on the Barry Montpelier Road.